From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast.
Is it time to go all in on Villa? And will the tide turn for the Toffees? Your essential Game Week 23 preview is right here on the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello again, it's Thursday and with double game week 22 having just finished on Wednesday night, there really is no rest for the wicked as game week 23 kicks off this Friday. So let's get straight into it. Joining me, Kelly Summers, it's former footballer, now broadcaster, Adrian Clark. Hello, Adrian.
Hello, Kelly.
It's a big hello to the lovely Lee from FPL Family. Morning, Lee.
Morning, Kelly.
And we have another debut on the podcast this week. Viewers around the world might know him from the Premier League's Global Output or as a podcast host for The Athletic. And he also stepped in last week to present the FPL TV show. So we thought it's only right we finally got broadcaster Ian Irving onto the podcast. Thankfully, he's accepted our invite. Hello, Ian. Welcome along.
It's about time you had me on, really, isn't it?
That was a nice start, wasn't it? Making me feel bad already.
Good morning, Kelly. My apologies.
Good morning. Good morning. It's silly that we haven't had you on before now because you do have quite the FPL credentials as well. You don't just talk to experts about the game. You've had some good finishes as well, haven't you?
Yes. Technically, I've been playing it for 14 seasons, which seems absolutely crazy, really. But I think
giving
really
away your
only
age
properly.
There.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I was five when I started. but yeah, probably only obsessively, really, since sort of 2014, 15. That year I finished just outside 3,500. I've had a couple of top 10Ks. But I have to say, the last couple of seasons and this season in particular, I've been rubbish.
That's the sign of a good and true FPL manager that can just hold their hands up and say, I'm not having the best time, because we've all been there.
Yeah, I'm just outside, what am I now, about 350,000, something like that. So I think my worst finish in recent years is about 150,000, 160,000, something like that. So I've got a lot of work to do. I used to be the one who sort of comes up on the rails. I used to call myself the tortoise because I'd let all the hares do their thing in the first half of the FPL season and then just slowly reel it in. But it's just not worked the last few seasons. And yeah, the tale of the hare and the tortoise is absolute nonsense. So the hare wins. Unfortunately.
Talk to me about your season, because you've said it's been frustrating, but you have been steadily climbing, haven't you? It started disappointingly, but you have got better. So although you're around 300,000 at the moment, which, by the way, I'm sure a lot of people listening on will not think is a bad rank, but you have been improving and maybe you could still get that top 100K finish. It's certainly not outside the realms of possibility.
No, that's definitely my target, yeah. I'm probably sort of being slightly self-deprecating by saying it's rubbish. It's just not where I would want to be and where I usually am, I suppose. But yeah, top 100K, definitely the target. And I think as well, something that's important to note these days, you know, I've said before, I'm playing it for 14 seasons, probably properly for getting on for a decade. The amount of players in the game now compared to when I started, the amount of access to information and expertise now compared to when I started, a top 100K finish is a massive achievement now compared to maybe what it was in the past when you consider how many millions of people are playing. I am getting better this year, but I've sort of stagnated around the 300,000, 400,000 mark. I've been there for sort of 5 or 6 weeks now. I'm hoping that the double game weeks that we're likely to have in the remainder of this campaign offers opportunity. Because I do get giddy over a double game week, including bringing in Trossard this week, which seemed like a great idea at the time and didn't really pay off. An 8-point hit in a double game week seems standard for me.
Don't worry, you're talking to someone that completely got blinded by the double as well and brought in Neil Mopay. Anyway, hopefully we can help you keep climbing the ranks and hopefully you can help us as well. Let's now look back on double game week 22, which saw 677,000 free hits played and almost 600,000 wildcards activated. One of those is on the pod today. We did have three postponements in the end. So in the end, four teams played twice, including Manchester United. And Bruno Fernandes was the big scorer over his double with 23 points. However, the headlines in United's first match were stolen by the returning Philippe Coutinho with a goal on his debut from the bench. We'll discuss him in detail shortly. There was no Cristiano Ronaldo in the Midlands, but he did play at Brentford, only to disappoint managers again with a blank and withdrawal on the 70-minute mark. Adam Webster was another double game week high score with 13, courtesy of his goal and heroic performance against Chelsea on Tuesday. As for Thomas Tuchel's side, no clean sheets with Hakim Ziyech and N'Golo Kante, the only two to return. We did tell you last week, didn't we? Don't forget the single game, because kudos to anyone who owned the game week's second highest scorer, Jack Harrison, for his huge 20 points. Jared Bowen and Kevin De Bruyne are also on target, whilst João Cancelo got another double-digit return with 11 points. All that, and we had another managerial sacking as Rafa Benitez left Everton after their 2-1 defeat at Norwich. Not too much then for our panel to dissect. Adrian, let's come to you first, because spoiler, it was you that played your wild card. Firstly, tell us why you did it and how you went.
Well, I got completely seduced by the double game week, first and foremost. And I also got unduly panicked by Leicester having their match called off against Burnley, because I'd made two transfers already. I'd gone in early, which was probably a schoolboy error. You're never going to believe who I picked. I picked Daka and Maddison, okay, who both ended up obviously scoring and doing ever so well. And I thought, oh no, I've only got three or four players on the double now. And so I thought, scratch that. I'm just going to go all in on a wild card. And I left out Daka and Maddison from said wild card. So it was, it was all about picking players that had two games. I just had it in my head that this is going to be an unbelievable week. And of course, Chelsea were rubbish. Manchester United, the main men didn't really deliver. It was, I tried to be a little bit different and it didn't go to plan. All I can say is thank goodness I made Mason Greenwood captain, which was a maverick call. Let's be honest. It was a little bit out there, but that one did pay off. The rest of my sides they had stinkers. Yeah.
Even the Mason Greenwood must have had you sweating at halftime, Adrian, because they didn't look like they were going to score Man United until he switched it up.
Well, honestly, knowing that I was going to come onto this pod and staring at the prospect of around 30-odd points on a wild card, all I can say is thank you, Mason. You've saved my bacon.
Mason Greenwood hadn't scored since two managers ago, so it was quite a brave part.
Yeah, that's brave.
And honestly, at Aston Villa, in the game at Villa, he had about 20 shots, so I was really frustrated that he didn't score in that game. I do think he's a goal scorer, and the reason I picked him was that it felt to me that Ronaldo wasn't sure to play, and that Greenwood seems to be an early favourite of Ralf Rangnick. So that was my thinking, and yeah, it kind of paid off.
In fairness, it's a good lesson for anyone, to be fair, because no one would have been tipping Mason Greenwood for this week. But what you've done, Adrian, is watch the games and actually make your own mind up on what you're seeing. Mm. It's brilliant to have access to stats. It's brilliant to have access to tips, but nothing really beats your own intuition at times and watching the football, seeing who you think is about to hit form, about to set off on a good run. It is also a good way of bringing in new players, even if people like myself sneer at you when I see Mason Greenwood in your team. Write in the notes when I'm doing my research last night, make sure you ask Adrian why Mason Greenwood as he put the ball in the back of the net. So it's a lesson to us all, that, I think.
Lee, what about your game week? Lots of managers will have taken a points hit this week, all lured in by the double game weeks. You took an 8-point hit. Is it safe to say it didn't quite go to plan?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, 8-point hits, I think, as Adrian alluded to there, are becoming a bit commonplace in my FPL game weeks now, which is it's a worry, right? I think I've been playing the game almost as long as Ian there, you know, sort of 10 years or so, and I don't remember taking many 8-point hits ever. So to take back-to-back 8-point hits is kind of testament to where we are with FPL this season. It's very pretty reactive, playing the week in front of you, you know, being very fickle with players and not being afraid to take those punts, I guess, as Adrian did with Mason Greenwood, and fair play on that one. My game week was okay, pretty solid. I think once you minus the 8, it's a little bit under par, if anything. But it massively swung on the Friday before the game week started, because I, like many FPL managers, was waiting on the Ralf Rangnick press conference. There was a lot of rhetoric about Ronaldo not being fit. Maybe he hadn't completed training that week or whatever. And I was sitting there thinking, right, if Rangnick gives us some positivity that Ronaldo's going to play, if he uses words like confident and sure and, you know, probably going to play, then I'll bring him in and I won't do what I was planning to do, which was Bruno in. And of course, we got that assurity, didn't we? We got everything we wanted to hear from Ralf Rangnick. So on that basis, I bought Ronaldo in over Bruno, and I'm not bitter about it at all, Kelly, but Ralf Rangnick is very much on my naughty list, I'm afraid.
All I can say is thank goodness Az wasn't booked to come on the podcast because he did have him. And I saw his team last night and was looking on very enviously. Anyway, let's look at your team for the game week just gone then, Ian, because you said you're a little bit disappointed with how it's gone so far this season. But you finished on 58 points, which is a pretty solid week, I'd say.
Yeah, it was a decent week. I took an 8-point hit like we've been talking about. It's just absolute ten a penny these days. But I think it's great if you're behind where you want to be like me. Because it gives you a real opportunity to have a go and have a look at things and try and take some more risks and see if they pay off, including taking out a double game week defender in Diogo Dalot for a single game week defender in Andy Robertson for a 4-point hit and still ended up points up on the week, which I'm a massive fan of Andrew Robertson in FPL. And I think he's been badly overlooked this season as well because we've all been seduced by Trent and Salah, which is right, and everyone should have them in their teams. Of course, when Salah comes back, it'll be a massive target for us all to get him straight back in. But I think Diogo Jota has been blocking Robbo for a lot of this season, actually. And when I brought Robertson in, originally it was game week 16, my intention was that I was going to have him over Jota until Salah left for AFCON because I thought that was something that would help me climb the ranks because Jota was very well owned. And actually, over the preceding game weeks, Robertson's outscored Jota by 6 points. And that's including two blanks during that time after he was sent off. And it includes his red card in that points total as well. So I'm quite pleased with myself. That's why I'm boasting about it. but as soon as I had an opportunity to get Robertson back in, it was my intention to do that. And when Salah's back, it'll be Jota who leaves my team if everything goes how I think it will. Rather than Robertson. So yeah, he's been my hero of the double game week and he's a single game week player. So that's great.
We were saying last week not to overlook the single game week players, but when it comes to it, it's so hard in a double, isn't it, to do that? But well done to you for doing that because big returns there for Andy Robertson. Anyway, as for IFPL Mini League, more change at the very top. Congratulations to Money Mace, who is our new leader after a massive 101-point haul. Bayern Brew is up to second after bagging an even better 105 points. A reminder, it's never too late to join our league. The code is 1KIKS7. Now though, with the Game Week 23 deadline just hours away, with there being Friday night football this week, it's time for us to focus in on two teams who had big weeks last week for very different reasons. Well, when we were working out what topic to discuss on the podcast this week, two things sprung to mind: Aston Villa and Philippe Coutinho, and Everton. We then checked the fixture calendar and wow, it's like we planned it. So today's main section of the podcast will focus on these two teams, not just for this week when they meet at Goodison Park, but also beyond then too. Let's start with Aston Villa and Philippe Coutinho. Their fixtures look quite nice. They've got Everton, Leeds, Newcastle, Watford, Brighton, Southampton. Plus, they've had two postponements recently. So at some point, they are going to have double game weeks.
I think we're putting them right up there, Kelly, to be honest with you. I'm excited to see Coutinho back in the league. Obviously excited to see him come back and play under Steven Gerrard as well. I think he's the sort of player that needs a bit of an arm round him. I don't think he necessarily had that at Barcelona. I think he had it a little bit at Bayern Munich. But coming back into the Premier League and playing with Stevie G, or at least under Stevie G, I think that's only good for him, right? And we saw him influence that game against Manchester United massively. You know, when he came on, a goal and assist. He made Jacob Ramsey look better as well because he was the foil. He created space for the likes of Jacob Ramsey as well. So all of a sudden, we've got all of these options at Aston Villa with Coutinho, with Buendia, who, by the way, didn't really get many FPL points against Manchester United in that game, but was fundamental to them getting a point. He played so, so well that game. So he is still an option as well. So you've got Coutinho, Buendia, Ollie Watkins, who presumably is going to benefit at some stage from all of this creativity around him. And then you look at the fullbacks as well, who under Steven Gerrard at Rangers, so the likes of Tavernier, were bombing forward, you know, at every given opportunity. We've already seen it this season with Cash and with Target under the previous regime. But now Steven Gerrard's come along with even more of a mentality to get those guys forward. And he's brought Luka Dean in, who, now don't get me wrong, Target's had a very good season so far, has looked pretty good. But Luka Dean, in my opinion, is a step up from Matty Target. And you've got everything that comes with Luka Dean that we've seen in FPL previously. Good deliveries, you know, very good on set pieces, etc. A little bit of goal threat from that left-hand side as well. So at 5.0, he's the one really that I'm having a look at. Of course, I'll be keeping an eye on Coutinho. I've got Jacob Ramsey in my team. But right now, those fullbacks, particularly Dino at 5.0, is the one that I'm considering the most.
Luca Dean's underperformed this year, Lee, hasn't he? I think we've all probably owned him at some point in our FPL careers because he's been a great asset to own over the course of the last few seasons. No goals or assists in 13 appearances for Everton this year, which is not like him at all. And maybe that spoke to his unhappiness at Goodison Park, I suppose. But now he's at Villa. Okay, he blanked in the first week. He got zero in the end, didn't he, considering he conceded twice and got booked. But 22 assists in the last three seasons for him shows his potential. Like you say, he's in a team that's going to attack more. Steven Gerrard empowers his fullbacks to get forward. And the 2018-19 season, Luca Dean got four goals. He was on set pieces as well. And there seems to be a sign that he's going to be trusted with those from that first appearance as well. So, yes, the attacking players are interesting. Coutinho, for me, is a wait and see how fit he is. I mean, it was a brilliant cameo, wasn't it, off the bench against United, but I sort of want to see him starting games and influencing them like that from the start. But yeah, Dean's my top Villa target, definitely. Although they can't keep clean sheets, so...
Yeah, it's a good shout about the set pieces as well, Ian, because I think we're expecting Dina to be on most of them, but Coutinho may pull rank as the kind of senior player, if you like. So, yeah, I'm a bit wait and see on the set pieces as well. But Dina, I think even without them, I think is a great shout. And at 5.0, I mean, yeah, if you're looking to ship a Chelsea defender, for example, if you're looking to get off of an Alonso, or if for whatever reason you've still got Reece James in your team, I was going to say a downgrade to Dean. Doesn't feel like a downgrade, does it? But at least he's cheaper is what I mean. A downgrade to Dina at 5.8 sounds all right.
What about an attack, Adrian? Lee alluded to it before that there is so many options now along with Philippe Coutinho.
Maybe too many options. That could be a point to consider because Stevie G obviously wants to pair Watkins and Ings, but as a partnership, they haven't clicked yet. And that means that in the long term, especially with Coutinho now there, that it might be one or the other. And of course, you might not be getting 90 minutes out of an Ollie Watkins or out of a Danny Ings. I think I can see a forward line of Coutinho, Watkins and Buendia with Ings coming in off the bench. I think that might happen more often than not. So I'm a little bit wary of Ollie Watkins. Now, he's had double the shots of Danny Ings. He's only played about 300 minutes more. He's had double the shots of Danny Ings. He had four times as many key passes as Danny Ings. So you'd imagine he would be the one that's in the team. But if you look at the minutes per goal ratio, Ings beats Watkins. So there's a decision there to be made for Gerrard. And for those reasons, I'm a little bit nervous of going in on Ollie Watkins. On Coutinho, obviously a great player. And he's going to get points. I was looking at midfielders that are cheaper than him, that have 90 plus points at the moment, which is obviously a stellar season. Bowen, Gallagher, Saka, Rafinha and Maddison, they're all cheaper than Felipe Coutinho. So for me, I think it has to be a wait and see, even though that was a blistering start from him.
If you want to go even cheaper, there's a brilliant option there with Jacob Ramsey, isn't he, Lee? You've benefited from him of late.
Yes, although I benched him this week, Kelly. So he was actually part of my... he was kind of the make-weight, if you like, to bring Ronaldo in. So and then actually Ronaldo showing up for that Brentford game blocked those points off the bench. But I can't be too upset about that. I wasn't ever considering playing Ramsey this week. But, you know, going forward, maybe I should.
He's not getting dropped. I'm telling you now, he's playing so well. He's playing so well that he's going to be a fixture, I think, in that first 11. I just think he's been outstanding, Ramsey. So, yeah, pure bargain.
What position was he on your bench, Lee?
He was second bench for me this week. So I had Rafinha first bench, who came on for Son, and then I had Ramsey second bench. But I agree wholeheartedly with Adrian. I think he's playing too well for Steven Gerrard to drop him. And what I like particularly about the way that Villa are set up attacking-wise is that Ollie Watkins, I think this is the reason a lot of the time he doesn't get 90 minutes, is he works so hard, Ollie Watkins. He works so hard. He reminds me a little bit of a young kind of Roberto Firmino, where he works and works those centre-halves and creates space and time for those other players to do their thing. And you know what? Buendia and Coutinho and Ramsey alike, if you give them time and space to do their thing, they're going to hurt you. So I think the setup there looks really, really good. And Jacob Ramsey, I agree with you, Adrian, looks a fixture in that team. Is there a better enabler in FPL right now? I don't think there is. It's 4.6, right? So if you're thinking about getting Salah back in, how are you going to get back to Mo? You know, Kevin De Bruyne, who we're going to talk about a bit later on. There's a lot of good premium options coming to the fore, and you're going to need these 4.6 enablers. And Ramsey looks the one.
So to put you on the spot, if you were to pick a Villa attacker and a Villa defender, or maybe you wouldn't want to have both, which would they be? Adrian, you first.
I would go for Digne. I think for the reasons that Ian outlined, he's proven in terms of end product. I know he's having a poor season, but fullbacks are going to be massive for Villa. They're quite narrow. Gerrard wants those fullbacks to fly forward. So yeah, I can see him getting a few assists, Digne. So he'd be the standout. And then I'm a fan of Watkins, but for the reasons outlined, I'm gonna park him. Coutinho's on my radar, but those players that I mentioned are ahead of him for obvious reasons.
What about you, Ian?
Definitely Luca Dean. In an attacking sense, no one at the minute. I want to wait and see. I want to see how Coutinho changes things for them. On paper, in theory, Coutinho would be definitely a target coming up. They've essentially got the best fixtures in the league over the next six game weeks. So I definitely think we'll all be looking for a defender and attacker from them. But I'm going to wait and see how this Everton game goes, whether Coutinho starts, if he does start, how that affects everyone else. If it is Danny Ings on the bench, then obviously he then becomes less of an option, and just see how it works out. So I think I've not really answered your question, but definitely Luca Dean.
But I understand your thinking. I said, would you go for a defender and an attacker, or maybe neither? And you've answered my question. You just go for Luca Dean. What about you, Lee? Are you in agreement? I get the feeling that you're quite happy owning Jacob Ramsey. Best enabler in the game, you said. And it sounds like you're tempted by Luca Dean as well.
Yeah, hat trick for Dean. Yeah, I'd have him as well. Happy to keep Ramsey as well as an enabler. Despite what we've just said about Watkins, I think the forward line is probably, depending on how your team's set up, that's probably where we might be looking for options as FPL managers. I think there's tons in midfield, and Coutinho could sit alongside the likes of Bowen, Jota, Rafinha. There's so much to choose from. However, up front, I think we haven't got quite so many options. Antonio looking a little bit out of form, and Ronaldo a bit of a question mark. Even the Watford boys, Kelly, I'm afraid to say, Dennis and King, not really lighting up the double game week as we expected. So depending on how your team's set up, maybe Ollie Watkins is a good option. He's a good solution for you in that front line. But in midfield, of course I've got my eye on Coutinho. Of course I have. But there's so many other options that I'm probably just going to wait on that one.
So the Watford boy is not lighting up FPL. Try telling that to Joao Pedro. Anyway, this weekend they do play Everton. I'm also saying that because someone as part of the podcast team is a Newcastle fan. I couldn't resist getting it in because, funnily enough, there's no Watford chat on this week's show. Is now a good time to play Everton? That's the next question. Because they do travel to Goodison Park this weekend. Everton potentially going to benefit from a new manager bounce. So is it still a good time to play Everton, would you say, Adrian?
Is it a good time? No, it's not a good time to play Everton because they're going to be fired up by Duncan Ferguson. It might be a good time to get on board with some of their players, I think, in a fantasy league perspective, because we've seen it so many times where a new manager comes in and the players improve and the fixtures aren't too bad, are they? I think the Villa game's tough for them, but Newcastle away, Leeds at home has got goals written all over it, Southampton away. So, yeah, and they've got some good games in hand to play Everton. So, no, I've got my eye on Everton players. I brought in Damari Gray as part of my wild card because I saw him in the flesh at Hull the other week and he was sensational. And we know he's been their best player really this season in terms of end product. So I'm going to give him a little bit longer. But yeah, Calvert-Lewin's the obvious one. Going back to what Lee just said, we're all on the lookout for better returns up top with the good fixtures coming up. Calvert-Lewin's record, which is tremendous. I think he's got 101 goal every 143 minutes this season. He, a fit Calvert-Lewin, under Duncan Ferguson, remember, who booms it. If you remember, they were very direct. They went old school Everton when he was in caretaker charge before. It'll be about getting crosses in for the big man. I can't squeeze him into my team this week, but Calvert-Lewin will be almost certainly coming in for Lukaku next week.
They've got no one to take those crosses, though, now, have they, Adrian? Because Luca Dean's gone. So the best delivery of that ball, if they're going to go with that style, he's disappeared. So
he hasn't played for ages, though, has he? They've got a new fullback, Mikalenko, haven't they? They're going to get the ammunition in. Andros Townsend's fit again. He can cross. That's he's true. A very good crosser. Yeah, Calvert-Lewin's, I think, the one to watch in the coming weeks.
He's my top attacking target, not including Mo Salah, of course, when he comes back, because just for a bit of a history lesson, 2019 December, Duncan Ferguson was brought in temporary charge and Everton had a rousing 3-1 win over Chelsea in his first match. Goodison Park was growling like it will be at the weekend. And Calvert-Lewin was the one leading the charge. He got two goals in that game. And he ended up going on a run of 10 goals in 13 matches, if you include the spell that Ferguson had in temporary charge and then the start of Carlo Ancelotti. Ancelotti was like talking up Calvert-Lewin as much as he possibly could. He was saying he was one of the best strikers that he'd ever worked with, and it really brought the best out in Calvert-Lewin. But it was the period with Ferguson where he really seemed to come to the fore, and it was from that first match that he really hit form. So if history does repeat itself, it'd be really interesting to keep an eye on him, because he started the season really well before his injury. Of course, he's not quite got back to form just yet, but the fixtures look all right. And Calvert-Lewin in the past has said that Duncan Ferguson has made him nastier. So we all like nasty, nasty points in our FPL team.
Yellow cards and red cards incoming then, Ian.
A bit of that as well, Lee. As long as he's scoring, I don't mind. That's fine.
Lee, Sam had Dominic Calvert-Lewin for that infamous last game week where obviously it all went wrong and she should have gone for Mikel Antonio. Mm. But I imagine that's a decision she's quite pleased with now, given what's happened.
Yeah, she's kept Dominic Calvert-Lewin for now, Kelly. I must admit, I don't share the guy's bullishness quite so much on Everton. I guess Rafa out, was it doomed to failure from day one? Perhaps it was, given the Liverpool connection. So there will be a lift in spirits, let's say, at Goodison for this game against Aston Villa. But we've already spoken about how good Aston Villa are and how well drilled Steven Gerrard's got that team. So I can't see that being that's obviously not an easy game for Everton. And, you know, Adrian, I think if the tactic is, you know, get Duncan Ferguson in and lump it to Dominic Calvert-Lewin, that's not really inspiring me from an FPL perspective. So it's very much a wait and see. Let's see what happens to Everton. I expect maybe a short-term improvement, but they're going to have to, I think, get somebody, you know, another manager in the longer term. And let's see what happens. But I won't be going to any of their assets in the short term, Kelly, no.
Okay, so that's Everton covered off. I get the feeling we could be revisiting that in a few weeks, depending on how they do with Duncan Ferguson or if they get a new manager in. Anyway, let's move on now to the look at the rest of the Game Week 23 schedule. Your Game Week 23 deadline is Friday the 21st of January at 6:30 PM UK time, 90 minutes before a huge battle at the bottom, Watford versus Norwich. As we've just been hearing then, Liverpool legend Steven Gerrard takes his Aston Villa side to managerless Everton in the early game. There are then 3:30 PM fixtures, Brentford Wolves, Leeds against Newcastle, and Manchester United host West Ham in a big battle for the top four. At 5:30 is Southampton versus Manchester City, the leaders going in search of their 13th straight league win. There are then 3:00 PM fixtures on Sunday, Arsenal welcoming Burnley, Palace Liverpool and Leicester hosting Brighton. Then it all ends with a London derby that we've only just seen twice in the EFL Cup semi-finals as Chelsea host Tottenham. Now, this is the part of the podcast where we ask our panellists to pick out a fixture from the weekend that's caught their eye. The only stipulation, of course, this week is that it wasn't Everton hosting Aston Villa. Ian, as it's your first show, you can go first.
Thank you, Kelly. It's very kind of you. I've picked out Manchester United versus West Ham United because it's a crucial match in the battle for the top four. And we've got a lot of FPL assets taking part in this game as well. Just to kick it off, I've got a couple of conflicting stats, if you don't mind indulging it for a minute. Manchester United have actually only kept 3 home clean sheets in the Premier League in the last calendar year, which is really poor. That's 20 Premier League matches at Old Trafford, just 3 clean sheets. A lot of us own David De Gea. Some of us might have had a tickle with someone like Diogo Dalot or something like that as well. But that stat is a little bit ominous. And even last night, De Gea's heroics couldn't ensure that Manchester United kept the clean sheet at Brentford, even though he still ended up, I think, with 4 points, which is another reason why it's good to own David De Gea. But one of those clean sheets, you guessed it, was against West Ham on the 14th of March. So there's maybe a little bit of encouragement there. And actually, West Ham's overall record down the years at United isn't great. And certainly in terms of scoring goals as well. How's this for a start? West Ham, in the last 35 matches in all competitions at Old Trafford since 1986, haven't scored more than once in a game at United. The last time they did it was 6 days before I was born. So maybe that,
what's that?
Can encourage you that United's defence might actually be all right in a game where we're all cheering on Jarrod Bowen and Mikel Antonio.
Great stats, I love it. I've got another one to chuck into the mix for Bowen owners, and I'm one of them. Wait for this one. Jarrod Bowen on fire, one of the most dangerous players in the country right now. away from home, 3 goals in 43 games.
Blimey.
He does it at London Stadium, but not so good on his travels. It's quite the difference, really. So just something to consider when you chuck that in with, you know, what Ian just said about West Ham's record at Old Trafford, and suddenly you're thinking maybe Bowen's on the bench. I don't know.
Well, West Ham haven't beaten a side in the top half of the Premier League table away from home this season either. So we're all teeing this up very nicely for a West Ham win at Old Trafford, scoring 2 goals this weekend, I think, aren't we? I wrote next to Bowen, bye, bye, bye. 6.8 million. Only Mo Salah's got more points from midfielders this season. 8 attacking returns in his last 5 game weeks. And then Adrian delivers that stat and it makes me think.
What about Mikel Antonio though, Ian? Because I don't think any of us are going out there and selling Bowen given the form he's in. 3 goals, 5 assists in his last 5. But Antonio is not looking quite so potent, is he? He's only got more than 5 points twice since game week 6. I mean, those first 3 game weeks, it was we all rushed to get in with double digit hauls. But I don't know if he's looking a little bit leggy, like he might welcome the winter break coming up. Would you sell him ahead of Manchester United?
Maybe. I think the reason that I wouldn't is because I'm not quite sure about who I'd get in to replace him. I talked up Calvert-Lewin before, so he's maybe an option, but I don't know whether I'd do that straight away, considering he's not yet hit that form. And maybe him to score is the encouragement that I'd need against Villa to then bring him in. But Antonio's fixtures look okay after the match at Old Trafford this weekend. Like you say, though, it's been like a season of two halves for him, hasn't it? In the first 9 game weeks, 6 goals, 4 assists. And in the 13 game weeks after that, just 2 goals and 3 assists. But those returns have picked up a little bit in the last few weeks. Enough for me to captain him over Bowen in double game week 21, which was a painful experience. But I think he's probably just about a hold for now, but that probably says more about the options that you could bring in than it does about Antonio himself. And even if you didn't want to play him this week, I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that you could leave him on the bench for a week and bring him back in once the fixtures improve. But yeah, it's more about there not being alternatives to him, I think. I mean, for Manchester United as well, in defence, I talked about the record that they've got at home. But David De Gea has made more saves than any goalkeeper in the Premier League now. 81 saves, which is 11 more than anyone else. He's the joint third highest scoring goalkeeper. And that's a lot down to his form in recent times as well. He's really picked up the points on that. And I think as well for United, after West Ham, all their fixtures are ranked 2 in the FDR. I think that's for the next sort of 5 matches, something like that. Alex Telles, if he could keep his place in this United team, which is fairly unlikely considering there's Luke Shaw as an option, but Telles is beginning to feel like Ralf Rangnick's first choice left back. I mean, he got his first assist of the season in game week 22 at Aston Villa. I interviewed him earlier on this season. He's got a quirk of kissing the ball before he takes a set piece, which I found very curious. But he tells me that the reason he does that is because he started it at Porto a few years ago when he got 21 assists in a season for them and decided he'd keep on doing it. The only bad news is Manchester United have had over 100 corners this season and haven't scored from a single one of them. So, Alex, I'm not sure if kissing the ball is still working, mate, to be honest. It's only 5 million, though. It's only 5 million, you know, and Delo's cheaper than that. He's not had an attacking return this season yet. He's 4.5. And again, it feels like he's sort of pushed himself as the first choice right back under Rangnick ahead of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. So they're very cheap. And if United's defensive numbers can improve, I mean, they were close-ish, weren't they, to a clean sheet last night, which had a lot to do with De Gea rather than the team's defending as a whole. But like I say, the fixtures after West Ham look okay. So maybe there's a bit of an alternative there for players who are looking left field and bringing in someone like Mason Greenwood.
Other than Mason Greenwood's and the masterstroke of bringing him in, what would you do if you owned Cristiano Ronaldo at this point, Ian? Because as we've said before, it was a frustrating double for his owners.
I think him being taken off early last night is a sign that he's going to start the match this weekend against West Ham. It felt like that's what that conversation was about that we saw with Rangnick leaning across to Ronaldo. And actually the omens in terms of the fixtures that are coming up for Manchester United are okay as well, to be fair. The next 5 matches, Ronaldo played in the corresponding fixture 3 times. The Leeds match and the Southampton match is not yet joined Manchester United. But they take on West Ham this weekend. He scored away at the London Stadium in the corresponding fixture. They face Burnley away after that. He scored and got an assist in the 3-1 win at Old Trafford against Burnley. And Watford at home comes after the Southampton and Leeds games, which of course he didn't play in the earlier matches in that. But United won both those games. He also got an assist away at Watford, despite Manchester United having an appalling day at Vicarage Road. So there's history there against these teams. The fixtures aren't bad. And it's Cristiano Ronaldo. He's one of those players that if you own him, you're not worried about him. And if you don't own him, you're worried about him. So I think he might even be a captain option for people this weekend as well.
I own him at the moment and I still feel worried about him. But maybe that's because I was at the Brentford Community Stadium last night witnessing that substitution and realising how wasted my armband was. Let's move on to another fixture now then. Which one are you looking at, Lee?
So I'm looking at Leeds versus Newcastle. I'm looking at a couple of players in particular. A player that I've been on this podcast a number of times and said to you guys how much I love this player. But Rafinha, what a guy, what a guy. And you could, I mean, I could have come on here and said, okay, well, Jack Harrison, you know, hat trick and a couple of games worth of form now for Jack Harrison. And at 5.5, he looks like a reasonable pick. Although before those two game weeks, I don't think there was too much to shout about from a Harrison perspective this season. So maybe it's just a little bit of short-term form. But Rafinha has been doing it all season. Very talismanic for Leeds. He's involved in 10 of their 24 goals so far this season. And in particular, that game that we saw against West Ham United, he created three big chances and he had three shots himself. So what you're going to get from Rafinha is not just a bit of creativity, but you're also going to get goal threat as well. He's the whole package, as far as I'm concerned. Has he got captaincy potential as well this week? Maybe he does. Only Vardy, Salah and Jota have got more than his 8 goals this season. So I think he's not a bad outside bet for captaincy. Plus, he's only 15.5% at time of recording owned in FPL. So he's not mega owned. He's still somewhat of a differential. So could be a very nice differential captain. So if I was going to go for a Leeds player, he would be the one to go to. Not just for this week, but with Villa, Everton, Man United coming up next. The fixtures don't look too bad for Leeds over the next few. From a Newcastle perspective, though, Alan St-Maximin is the player that I'm going to talk about. He's third right now for FPL points amongst forwards. So going back to what you were saying before, Ian, and the lack of options up front in FPL, well, there we are. You know, Alan St-Maximin, third in the list, 9 attacking returns all season. He had blanked in 11 of his 12 games before scoring in game week 19 against Manchester United. So again, have to be a little bit cautious and careful that this isn't just a bit of short-term form from St-Maximin. But certainly, he was electric against Manchester United, wasn't he? Absolutely electric. And if we look at the Newcastle fixtures coming up, obviously it's this Leeds game. Then it's Everton. We're not quite sure what sort of Everton we're going to get. Aston Villa, West Ham. So if you want Alan St-Maximin, I would tentatively have a look at him for this Leeds game and then potentially Everton. But whether you'd want to hold him longer term is a bit more of a question mark. So the one to look at for this game, I think, is Rafinha. And if you've got him, like I have, I think you should consider him for captaincy.
On Rafinha, I was looking at his minutes per goal ratio. Obviously, you've outlined how many he scored. It's so good. Minutes per goal, he scores at a faster rate than Mount, Lukaku, Foden, Madison, Antonio, and the darling of this season, Conor Gallagher. So, yeah, he's look, Newcastle, this should be a good game. I think this should be, I'd see goals in this game. And, yeah, Rafinha's, I think, a legitimate captaincy option.
Mm. And there's a reason, Adrian, I decided to choose Rafinha and St-Maximin to pick on there and not talk. Notice I didn't talk at all about the defences. And that's because, you know, both of these sides are right up there for the bad defensive stats, right? Whichever one you look at, attempts conceded, XGC, or just simply goals conceded. Yeah, Leeds and Newcastle, both right up there. So I would not consider going in on either defence. And, you know, 0-0 incoming, but I'm expecting a lot of goals from this game.
You might have tempted me to captain Rafinha, to be honest.
Well, I'm certainly considering it, Ian. I mean, the Newcastle defence is not great, despite the addition of Kieran Trippier. They're far from watertight. I just love this player, right? And despite all the stats that I've just reeled out about Rafinha, every time I watch him, he's creating so many chances. He's taking set pieces as well. Crushed one against the bar against West Ham, didn't he? So the route to points for Rafinha is multiple. There's lots of opportunities for him to get points. So yeah, I think you should be having a look.
Well, let's finish with the big one on Sunday then, Adrian. Chelsea versus Spurs, you've been taking a look at. Do you expect this to go a similar way to the EFL Cup semi-finals when Chelsea came out on top?
It's a really difficult match to call, I think, because Chelsea controlled those League Cup semi-finals, clearly the better side. But then when you look at your eye, when you use your eyes in the Premier League, the eye test, they fail it, don't they, Chelsea? They're just something doesn't really feel or look right about them. Lukaku not in great form. They're not basically with the back three system without James and Chilwell, they're not the same. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Tuchel went to a back four for those two League Cup games against Spurs. And I would imagine he'll do the same here. I think that's what he might need to do in the short term to get an extra attacking midfielder on the pitch. So yeah, it's hard to support Chelsea ahead of this game. I mean, it's hard to support Chelsea any time, isn't it? I mean, come on, no one likes Chelsea apart from Blues fans.
No comment, Adrian.
But yeah, it's even at the back. I think 10 of the last 11 Premier League games, no clean sheet for Chelsea. So you know, even that sort of, it was a gimme, wasn't it? Earlier on in the campaign, Chelsea defenders. You can't think that way. And when you look at how Tottenham played the other day, or last night rather, at Leicester, pretty dangerous, particularly on the break. Kane looked almost back to his best, didn't he? He was taking too many shots on, I think, from here, there and everywhere. But he looked sharp. And so I think Kane is an option here, even though he's got a poor record against Chelsea. Lukaku, if you haven't got Lukaku, certainly don't bring him in. I mean, the big story around this fixture for me personally is it's time to offload Chelsea players because they've got a few blank game weeks coming up. And I don't see this as one that you can guarantee that they're going to return in. So yeah, I think Mount is going to go this week from my 11 and Lukaku next week. I'm not quite brave enough to take the hit on Lukaku. I think he's still got a chance, of course, because of his quality of scoring in this game. But offloading Chelsea, I think, is probably the way forward.
Yeah, I wonder whether Harry Kane is a captaincy option this week as well, considering we're sort of scrambling around a little bit for players. When you talk about Chelsea's record there, you say it was 10 out of the last 11 games they've not kept a clean sheet, so 1-11. They've conceded 15 in the last 13 matches, and that comes off the back of conceding 3 in the first 10. Their defensive assets were pretty much the best players to own in defence, along with Trent Alexander-Arnold and João Cancelo at the start of the year. In fact, I think loads of us doubled up, didn't we, at one point or another on Alonso and James. But not now. And jump off, like you say, certainly the defensive assets, jump off them. They've got 3 blanks in the next 5 game weeks as well, given their fixtures in other competitions. So even if the form wasn't great, 3 blanks in 5 is a good reason to jump off too. And it just doesn't look quite right at Chelsea at the minute. They don't look at their free-flowing best. And I think, yeah, if you've got any Chelsea assets in whatever position and you're looking at bringing people in, I think they'd be the first ones to go for me.
Brilliant. Well, do remember your deadline this week is Friday at 6:30 PM UK time. Now, though, to look further into the distance. It is time for the Longview. Regular listeners know the drill, but if you're new, each week we use the Premier League's fixture difficulty rating to take a look at who has the most favourable or least favourable upcoming schedule. The FDR can be found at premierleague.com. At the top this week, it's Aston Villa. We've already talked about them. Then Manchester City. Now, Manchester City are interesting because they don't have any double game weeks as it stands, but they're going in search of their 13th league win this weekend, as I said. So, Lee, we can't really ignore them, can we, given that form?
I don't think we can, Kelly. No, they look unstoppable at the moment, don't they? And they've gone large parts of this season without arguably their best player, Kevin De Bruyne, who in the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks has really come back to the fore and looked more like the De Bruyne that we've seen in previous seasons. So, yeah, look, if you weren't convinced by my Rafinha narrative earlier, Rafinha captain, then this is the only team. I think the Man City midfielders are the only players that would convince me against Rafinha, I think. I don't have any right now. I don't have any right now, but I do have Son in my team. So we'll look ahead to transfers in a bit on the pod, but I expect that I'll be bringing in a Man City midfielder of some description. However, if you're not convinced by that and you've got Cancelo, as many FPL managers will have, equally good captaincy choice, I would suggest. The Man City defence look good for clean sheets, certainly not just in the Southampton game, but going forward over the next 4 or 5 game weeks. If you haven't got Cancelo still, for whatever reason, I think he's an easy in. But elsewhere in that midfield, I think it's a straight shootout between De Bruyne, Sterling and Foden. very difficult to choose between the three. I would say, obviously, the value pick is Foden. But the man on form right now is Kevin De Bruyne. And if you wanted a money no object captaincy choice from me this week, it could be the Belgian.
I think Phil Foden's the choice for the City midfield. Kevin De Bruyne has come back and he's been great, but it's a 4.1 saving. And considering we're trying to get Salah back in as well, I know you said money no object, Lee, so I'm guessing it wasn't a sort of a weighing up of options money-wise. But Foden, 8 million, I can do Leandro Trossard to Foden, and it's 0.0. I'm not a fan of early transfers in any circumstance. I never have been. Because I like to be safe and not get caught out. And this season of all seasons feels like it's particularly foolish to bring in Patson Daka and James Maddison really early. Ahead of the game deadline. But yeah, for me, Phil Foden is the choice. The only issue with him, and this is going to go for a lot of the City players, is just how nailed he is, this pet roulette thing that we always talk about. He's had a few issues with illness and injury in recent weeks as well, and it's meant that he's only actually completed the 90 minutes twice in the last 11 game weeks. Four City midfielders have got more points this season than Foden as well, but when it comes down to points per match, which is maybe a better metric for us to use right now, no one's got a better record than these 5.4 points per match in the City midfield. And in fact, only five midfielders in the game at the minute can better that. That includes Philippe Coutinho, who's only just come in and obviously did that amazing cameo, like we've said, against Manchester United. And it also includes Salah and Son, who are not available at the minute. So for me, Phil Foden, I think, is the top Manchester City target when you consider the form that he's had this season, the fact that he's playing predominantly as a false nine for Manchester City, and the fact that he is 4.1 cheaper than Kevin De Bruyne. And it also feels like, despite what I've said about minutes, he feels like he's more likely to play more regularly at the minute than Mahrez and Sterling. But I am trying to second guess Pep Guardiola here, which is never a good thing to do.
And it doesn't get any easier in defence, Ian, I don't think either, right? I think Pep has shown that he's happy to kind of rotate Laporte, Diaz, and maybe even John Stones a little bit as well. So I would be a bit reluctant maybe to go in on that double defence as well and add somebody to Cancelo. And have the two of them at the back. So it is that midfield. It will be one of those guys coming in for me this week. And we know how to play the Pep roulette by now, Ian, right? You get a player, you keep faith, you stick with him for a few weeks, and you know that over the course of a few weeks, he'll get his minutes and he'll get his return. So I like your Foden shout, but money no object, I think I'd still go for De Bruyne.
Okay, well, let's look at the other end of the fixture ticker, because at the other end, it's Burnley. Yes, they're bottom of the Premier League and now they do have some tough fixtures. But the reason I wanted to bring them up is they do have five games in hand. Do we almost have to have one eye on them, potentially whoever they're going to bring in to replace Chris Wood if they bring someone in, potentially Maxwell Cornet when he comes back? Or am I being a bit too optimistic here, Clarkie?
Quite optimistic. They've been linked with Benteke, haven't they? And that would be an interesting signing, because Benteke has had a pretty good season. It looks like the Benteke of old. So yeah, keep your eye on that. But I mean, no, is the bottom line. I just don't see Burnley being as solid as they used to be. They used to rack up a lot of clean sheets, didn't they? At Turf Moor especially. And they've been rubbish at Turf Moor for a long, long time now. I think Cornet in the long term, maybe when they've got those double game weeks to come, Cornet will be a nice cheap option in your central midfield. But I'd wait for those fixture announcements on Burnley. There's no reason right now to get stuck in on them.
So many other good midfield options, aren't there, Adrian? I don't think you're going to bring in Cornet even when he comes back from AFCON. And up front, there's a real dearth, isn't there, at Burnley? So no eyes on Burnley for me, Kelly.
Yeah, as always, keep an eye on PremierLeague.com and the Premier League social media channels, because any of those rearranged fixtures will be announced on there. I should also tell you that Chelsea are actually at the very bottom of the fixture ticker, but that is largely because they've got three blanks in their next five game weeks, as we were saying before. That is the long view covered off. Anyway, it's time now to check in with our panel's own teams and their plans for game week 23. So time to put our panel on the spot then. We've already had a few hints about who they're going to bring in and who they're going to captain. Let's see if we can get them to be decisive. Adrian, I'll come to you first. After your wild card woes, what are you going to do to sort your team out?
I'm clearing the Chelsea decks. That's what I'm doing. Getting shots of those blue monk. You know, they let me down big time, and they're going to pay the price. I'm afraid they're getting axed.
Has anybody got a wild card Adrian can borrow?
Steady on. I've got three, and of course, with these blank weeks, it feels like I need to take a minus four hit because they're all kind of big hitters. That I don't really want to save on
minus
the bench.
Minus four the week after a wild card.
I think I might have to. Look, initially, the one transfer I'm making is Rafinha for Mount. That's a no-brainer. That's happening. I'll save a little bit of money. But listening to you guys about, you know, and talking through Chelsea, I've got Rudiger, and there's a temptation to get rid of him for Cancelo. So for a minus four hit. Next week, Lukaku will go. And at the moment it's Calvert-Lewin, but let's see how he performs this weekend.
You're a brave man trying to plan transfers beyond 1 week. It doesn't feel like I can really do that at the moment with everything that keeps changing. Lee, what about you? You've still got what looks like a Son Heung-min shaped problem in your midfield.
Yes. So Son is going to go for a Man City midfielder, almost certainly. And I can do a straight one free transfer to either, obviously to Foden, because he's much cheaper. And I could get Sterling as well for the same money as Son. I can't shake off the Kevin De Bruyne feeling, though. I just feel like he's back to the real Kev that we're used to seeing over the last two seasons. So it could be that I drop Alonso down to somebody like a Ryan Ait Nouri or somebody cheap in defence, an upgrade Son to Kevin De Bruyne for a hit. Not certain about that because I think Ian's kind of swaying me towards Phil Foden a little bit as well. But I will be playing the Pep roulette for sure because not only do I like that City fixture this week, but ongoing, the next four or five look really good.
Ian, you might have persuaded Lee to do a different transfer to what he was originally going to do, but what are you going to do with your own team?
I don't know.
This is the point, you have to be decisive.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, it's my first time on the FPL podcast. I'm going to make a live transfer on the pod.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Because I don't know what I'm going to do. And also, like we said before, it doesn't feel like the time right now to be playing any or making any transfers early. It feels like a recipe for disaster with the way this season's gone. So Foden is probably my top consideration. And like I said before, I can do him for Trossard, and it's a direct swap, but it doesn't cost any points or anything like that. I can bench Alonso. I think if I was a little bit more confident about Villa at Everton, I would have probably just gone for Luka Dean straight away because the stats even from the Manchester United game looked pretty good. And like we said, Villa have got the best fixtures over the next sort of six in the league. So yeah, I don't think it will be Luka Dean, despite the fact that I've talked him up so much. And Calvert-Lewin is on the agenda, but at the minute, I've got Ronaldo, I've got Antonio, who are my starting front two. I'm not sure that I want to take either of those two out just yet. And also, I've got Broja as the third centre forward, but he's usually on my bench, so it doesn't feel like a time to change system for me either. So I think the most likely transfer at this point is Foden in for Trossard. However, you'll probably log in on Saturday morning, look at my team, and it will not be any of these things because just at the minute, I feel like I want to try and take a few risks here and there. So there may be even a hit in there or something like that. I'm not sure who to captain, like I alluded to before either. I don't know, Kelly, is the answer.
You heard Kelly when she said, we try and be definitive on this podcast.
I know. I'd love to be. Like I said, I would love to just come on here, you know, really confident, right, transfer, literally leaning forward, tapping the keys. You could hear me tapping the keys as I typed the website in and made the transfer, but I just don't feel decisive enough to do it. I think it will be Foden, though. You know, if you want me to sort of put my neck on the line a little bit and get off the fence, I think it will be Phil Foden in.
Okay, so Ian isn't sure about his captaincy, he's just said there. Who are you leaning towards, Clarkie?
Well, I've got Jota and Ronaldo in my starting 11. They are second and third behind Salah for expected goals per 90 across the season as a whole. Ronaldo's got a good record against West Ham, who haven't been defending very well. I think we've maybe overlooked that a little bit. They've been a far shaker at the back. So right now, because Palace away is a tough one to call for Liverpool right now, I'm going to give it to Ronaldo with Jota on the vice captaincy, but bringing in Rafinha and has thrown something new into the mix.
Lee, Rafinha getting the armband for you, as you intimated earlier.
Yeah, he will be, I think. I'll be tempted by my Man City midfielder, and if I do bring in Kevin De Bruyne for a hit, then it will be Kevin De Bruyne, captain. But if I bring in Foden or Sterling, I think it will be the Brazilian. Yeah, I'm going to go for Rafinha. As I said before, fairly good differential anyway. So if you're going to captain him and it comes off, happy days.
Well, thank you for your company today, guys. Good luck for game week 23. Ian, did you enjoy it? Please tell me yes. Otherwise, we're going to have to cut you out from this whole podcast.
I loved it, Kelly. Can I come back, please?
It's not my decision, but if it was, I don't have as much power as you think around these parts. But if it is my decision, of course you can. Anyway, good luck to everyone listening as well. Do remember to get your team sorted by Friday at 6:30 PM UK time. And remember, fantasy.premierleague.com and the Premier League app are still your hub for all things FPL content-wise. Before we go, a polite and gentle reminder, if you haven't already, we'd love your votes at the 2022 Sports Podcast Awards. We've been nominated for the Best Soccer Podcast, and we're very happy about it too. Voting is open now at www.sportspodcastawards.com. Thanks very much, and we'll be back next Thursday.